The short-lived House Committee on Energy Independence and Global Warming held its final meeting yesterday. Created in 2007 by Speaker Nancy Pelosi to press for caps on carbon emissions, incoming House Speaker John Boehner is eliminating the committee, calling it unnecessary. Meanwhile, the UN Climate Change Conference is nearing the end of its first week of talks in the Mexican resort of Cancun. But expectations for any meaningful advances are so low that skeptics say it's fitting the talks are being held in a resort where people go to escape rather than in the real world. So what's it like in the real world? Well, for one farmer in Minnesota, increasingly wet. Jack Hedin farms 250 acres in southern Minnesota. He grows vegetables, hay, and grain. Jack, welcome.
Thank you very much.
And in your neck of Minnesota there were floods in 2004, 2005, 2007, rain. How much water?
Oh, it's almost immeasurable, and not just coming in large doses, these heavy storms that we're having, but the consistency of it, almost unrelenting nature, it seems like. We've been wet for years and years here.
Yeah, and in 2007, 23 inches in 36 hours. You can't even wrap your brain around that. The title of your op-ed piece in the New York Times was An Almanac of Extreme Weather, and you detail it. But stupid question to start. Isn't water good for farming? You write about reading your great-grandfather's memoirs. He lived during the Dust Bowl, and he suffered drought.
In the world of vegetables, which is what we grow, rain certainly is helpful at times, but it also can really complicate what we do. The timing, disease issues, and surplus moisture is just not good at all for organic matter and for fertility cycles in the soil. In the world of vegetables, when you think about where vegetable production really occurs in this country, it's in the desert areas of California, Texas, and so forth. And when it's too wet, it's really hard for vegetables.
Well, you talk about a 3-acre onion field just turned to mush, 7-acre carrot field overtaken by weeds. But not only that, this was flooding. You lost, what, machine shops, and your equipment was flooded.
Oh, yes. Over the course of years, we've had tractors in water up to the oil pans, heavy equipment bogged down in fields that we thought we could get into, compounding problems that you get when it's too wet.
Well, and you write that in 2007 it got so bad you actually moved the entire farm 8 miles up the road to higher ground. That turned out to be a real good decision because there were some flash floods, another natural disaster, your neighbor's crops were ruined. How was this year, 2010?
Old-timers in our area, people that we have contact with a lot of perspective, had never seen anything like it. Rain after rain after rain. August, things dried up a bit, and we had a lot of heat, which really pushed things along. Our neighbors that grow corn and beans were combining those crops weeks ahead of schedule and fully a month and a half, 2 months ahead of where they had been last year. This is not just in our world of vegetables that these effects are being felt. I see our neighbors in conventional grain production struggling as well.
Well, you look, another thing your great-grandfather said in his memoirs is that in his 60 years of farming, he had only one perfect season. You know, that's what farming's all about. You never get it perfect. But as you write, even the Minnesota State climatologist Jim Zanlow says that you guys had 3 1,000-year rains in the past 7 years. So something's going on. Are you convinced it's global warming?
I am myself, yes, absolutely. When you look at the climatology reports and the long-term trend forecasting from people like Mark Seely at the University of Minnesota, people who have spent a lot of time looking at what high CO2 concentrations, what the implications of those things are for the long term, that's when the real concern kicks in for me, that this is not just an anomaly, this is perhaps a glimpse of the future long term for us.
Well, what to do about it? Because you also admit you're a part of the problem. You have 10 tractors. They burn thousands of gallons of diesel fuel every year.
Oh, absolutely. And we're looking actively at things that we can be doing. One of our tractors now we have converted to electric. We're going to be experimenting with 2 additional tractors within the next year or two. And we're hoping to be charging those tractors off of solar panels that will be installed on the roof of our shed here within the next 2-3 years. There are a lot of things we can be doing with our crop rotations to be building organic matter in the soil, which is essentially sequestering carbon.
Well, and tell us how you feel government policy could help you with that, because you say right now federal policy rewards the wrong kind of farming.
You know, at this point in time, farmers are paid through the direct payment program for acres that are enrolled in corn base and they're producing corn. And then, of course, there's the additional corn ethanol subsidy that the federal government has been pushing for a number of years. These are all things which reward and pay farmers for producing large acreages of corn, which certainly have their place, but there needs to be a counterbalancing factor there to look at more sustainable rotations and carbon sequestration that we can be doing by growing cover crops and resting land, fallowing lands.
Yeah, right now you say you're seeing fewer acres planted with these erosion kind of preventing techniques, and you think it's because farmers are getting rewarded for the quantity of acres, maybe of corn, rather than the quality of practices.
Oh, absolutely. In our area, for example, 10, 15 years ago, there were many, 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 many acres enrolled in Conservation Reserve Program set-asides. These are hillsides and steep acreages, places that are vulnerable to erosion. A lot of acres that were planted in these set-asides because farmers were being paid and compensated by the USDA for these soil-conserving practices. Now with this corn ethanol subsidy and increasingly high corn prices driven by corn ethanol, and quite frankly by grain failures in other parts of the world, you get a complex of factors forcing or encouraging farmers, I should say, to plow up these set-aside acres and plant corn. And this is having a very deleterious effect, I believe, on everything from soil and water quality in this area to and including global warming.
Well, it's also being driven by corporate farming, you know, big farm factories who are kicking and screaming about any climate change legislation because they think that their cost of fuel and fertilizer is going to go up. Are you for legislation that would have emission controls in it, even if your fuel costs went up just a little bit?
Absolutely, I am. We recognize that this is one of these costs that we have externalized. Additional taxes on fuels, on fertilizer that are fuel-based or derived from natural gas or petroleum, those costs need to rise. There need to be higher taxes. These things need to be built into the cost structure of our food system in general, and they're presently externalized. And the price ends up getting paid by farmers like ourselves or our neighbors that are victimized by increasingly unpredictable weather, volatile weather. And we need to take and build those prices back into our food system in general in order to have a more realistic sense of what it's costing us on a big picture to produce our food.
As we said, back to the real world. Jack Kadeen operates Featherstone Farm in Rushford, Minnesota. You can read his op-ed, An Almanac of Extreme Weather, at herenow.org. Jack, thank you and best to you.
Thank you very much.
Well, we'd love to hear your thoughts on anything, but especially if you're a farmer. You know, are you seeing the effects of climate change? Are you changing the way you're farming? Just go to herenow.org, click on Contact Us to send an email, or you can scroll down and leave a comment right there on the homepage, herenow.org. Back in a minute, Here and Now.